The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
Do you tell them be patient?
Well, it's making sure that you can't sit there and wait. You have to, if in a run game, you have to go and get on them, but you have to make sure that you're not out of control and that your head's up and your eyes are up and that you're able to redirect and again, not be overly aggressive when you're trying to block players like that. And again, it'll change based on who the player is and who you're going against, but that would be, you know, Max's skill set.
Mike Vrabel on the Greg Hill Show earlier this week welcomes us into hour number two here on WEEI. Dan Ball with you. Brian Frazocco back behind the glass. Pleasure to be with you as the New England Patriots finally, honestly, mercifully, it has been a year, 2 years, 3 years, it feels like, since the last time the Patriots played football. And there has been just too much to get to this offseason. However, That is what befalls a team that is going through a turnover and a rebuild. And so I guess fans in the area have kind of been treated to some pretty quiet and relatively drama-free, or at least movement-free, off seasons. You kind of knew most of the pillars of Patriots football for a long time. So that was not the case the last couple of years. The question becomes, were the Patriots successful in reestablishing new pillars and a new foundation for their future this offseason? Before we get to that, a text from the 603 that is actually a really good point to point out regarding the most recent conversation we had about the Cy Young, that Aroldis Chapman is and should and is deserving of getting some kind of recognition, not necessarily being a finalist. I think you have three tremendous finalists that we just listed off a few moments ago, but Chapman's season is comparable to two closers, Craig Kimbrell in 2015, Eric Gagne, I believe, in 2003, both of whom were in the Cy Young conversation. Craig Kimbrell finished fifth in his season, and Eric Gagne won the Cy Young. Now, I just think there's been too much that Scoobal has done and Crochet has done in order to have Chapman jump above them, but the facts are the facts that he is having a truly historic season in terms of how much better than his peers and how much better than average Chapman has been this season. So I think it's a very poignant argument to make.
You see some of the numbers on him that just don't even feel real.
Right.
They're just ridiculous. And you're like, there's no way that can be true, and it is.
He's going for the single season Red Sox reliever ERA title, which is held by Jonathan Papelbon from 2006 when he had a sub-1 ERA as the closer.
And when was the last time he gave up a hit, Chapman?
It's been 46 hitters in a row, I think was the number.
Maybe. There's just so many stats like that with him that he's just like, they're ridiculous. So to your point, just to even have him in the conversation, again, Scoobal and Crochet are both having too good of seasons to sort of put him as any sort of chance to give him the actual award, but he should be in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to say he's a top five, if you wanted to, and I mentioned DeGrom, he's in the American League. I'm so used to him being a Met that the four, it's probably Crochet, in any order, Crochet, Scoobal, Hunter Brown, DeGrom, and then I think it's Chapman. I really do. A top five Cy Young season for a guy who, admittedly, I saw sign and was like, what the hell are they doing? What are we doing in 2025 where our quote-unquote closer competition is going to be between 37-year-old Aroldis Chapman?
Yep.
37-year-old Aroldis Chapman and hasn't pitched in 10 years, Liam Hendricks.
And that was the first move that they made in the offseason was to get Aroldis Chapman. It felt like before that they obviously signed Bregman, that was sort of their big move.
Right.
And
got
heavily criticized.
Yeah, because, I mean, he had been regressing, at least in terms of the strikeout numbers. He'd been walking a ton of people. He was old. And then that's just the on-field stuff. And then I'm supposed to like get up and cheer and all right, let's go and want to buy a jersey and I have to, and that's who it is. And so, yeah, it was ripped, myself included. I could not figure out what the thought process was behind it. And it was, and Brian's right, it was like the starter's gun went off for free agency, and the Red Sox said, "We got Chapman." And everybody went, "Are you sure about that?" And now he's here for another year plus. And so, yeah, what a turnaround. And we didn't, I don't think we talked about this in the afternoon show. I don't know if another show covered this, but the prevailing story is that, and I'll have to remind the guys to ask Alex Cora about this next week, because the prevailing story is that Connor Wong called a pitch, called a fastball, an inside fastball during spring training with the pitch comm. And apparently, after pitching whatever it is, 15 years in baseball, hearing the robotic inside fastball, the Brezbot in his ear, triggered Chapman to go, "Oh, I should try locating my fastball." I swear to God, that's the story that's been told, is that Connor Wong pressing inside fastball on the pitch comm unlocked this new level of Aroldis Chapman. That seems to be one of the more absurd and untrue things I've ever heard.
All of a sudden, the Mookie Betts trade doesn't look so bad.
Exactly. Connor Wong saved the season. Like, forget the fact that it took him 5 months to get an extra base hit and an RBI. Forget that. Doesn't matter. He saved the season. He could have retired after spring training and still would have saved the season for the Red Sox. But anyways, we'll leave that one there. Also, want to make sure everybody is aware of what's going on. So I was trying to talk to Brian in the opening segment, and he's running around the booth. He has his headphones off. I'm like, what the hell is Boss Man Laird telling him to do back there that I can't just ask him about Peyton Tolley? So apparently there was a tornado warning that was going on last hour that I can't hear in the studio, but I guess was going out over the station. And so I believe it's been downgraded to a severe thunderstorm warning, but it's ripping through the northern part of Massachusetts right now. So basically from Boston north and then west, there's a cell that's kind of going through into New Hampshire. So just be on the lookout. Looks like it's going to get a little gnarly. Actually, it is extremely dark outside
our studio. It is pitch black outside of the window right now.
I just looked out the window for the first time in 20 minutes or so, and it is pitch black. So
I had to double check the time. I was like, is it 8:30?
Yeah, I know. I know it feels like it's going quickly, but no. So we'll keep you posted if anything else comes through. Apparently the National Weather Service will also do it themselves, as they're inclined to do. But yeah, just head on a swivel there. If you're driving around, it looks like the next hour or so is going to be a little rough. So just keep that in mind as I'm watching the ticker on the bottom of Boston 25. They went back to college football, so if they don't need to break in with the news report, that means the tornado report or tornado warning goes away. But still that is something to keep an eye on. Okay, no easy way to pivot from tornadoes to the Patriots, but that's what we're going to do because the Patriots play game one of their season tomorrow. By the way, don't forget to tune in to the brand new crew on WEEI's NFL or Patriots Football Sunday. So it's Arcand, it's Mego, it's Shime, and it's our guy Ted Johnson. Tommy Curran will join the fun at a certain point tomorrow as well. They're also doing a 10 questions with Ted segment that I know Ted was very intrigued by. I don't know if they're going to give him the questions beforehand or not, like the quiz was Stiz, but we'll certainly see. But anyway, so that's coming up tomorrow at 10 o'clock before the Patriots kick off for tomorrow. And it's been a whirlwind of an offseason for New England this offseason. And I have to start with the overwhelming positive, which is the Patriots unequivocally got better almost everywhere this offseason. And I think there's nothing more important, and this is such a wicked cliche, but I think it's also a very important thing to note. The culture and the level of accountability and just the intangibles, the things that are supposed to be established from coach to veterans down to younger players, that was completely wiped clean and reinstalled during this, say, 6 to 9 month period between the end of Patriots football, the hiring of Mike Vrabel, and then the beginning of the 2025 season. That was something I think the Patriots deserve credit for. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. It was smacking you in the face at the end of the season that something was very wrong with the way that the team was being led and the way that the players were being allowed to act and the way the coaches were acting around the players. But they identified that. They made swift and sweeping changes, and they brought in a guy who brought what they wanted from Gerard Mayo in a former Patriot and a guy who continues the Patriot legacy and the Patriot way and all that jazz. They coupled what they saw in Gerard Mayo with what they actually needed, which is a guy who was coached before and a guy who wants to be here, wants to be a head coach, and knows what it means, knows what it means to be successful as a player, successful as a coach. But I also think it's fair to say that Mike Vrabel knows what it's like to be unsuccessful as a coach and how to deal with seasons where things aren't going your way and maybe lessons that were learned in seasons that didn't go the Titans' way. So I think that's in a year that is still very much in the midst of a rebuild, not the end of a rebuild, but the midst of a rebuild. I think a coach who is experienced enough and knows how to deal with a team that's a playoff contender, fringe playoff team, wild card team at probably best, and 6-7 win team at worst, I think that's really valuable. So as we look through the biggest winners and the losers for Patriots fans ahead of their week one matchup against the Raiders, the reestablishment of a culture that actually has a chance to win anything, I think, is win number one. And even if the 2025 season doesn't go according to the best plans, then you still know you have something that will lead to winning football at some point, you'd think, or competitive football, and guys trying their hardest and leaving it all out there and not putting forth embarrassing efforts, because there were a few too many embarrassing efforts, let's say, over the last 2 years for this team. So I think you'll see much less of that. That's a huge win. How about outside of things that are intangibles? This might be unpopular because I know that there's a lot of names that still make you go, well, there's no Jamar Chase, there's no Justin Jefferson, there's no CeeDee Lamb, there's no DK Metcalf or even Chris Godwin. I think the wide receiving room had a net positive training camp. I think it was one of the worst regarded positions on the depth chart going into the preseason. And while it's certainly not the best, I think it got a lot better because Kayshon Booty was one of this team's camp winners far and away.
He was rumored to be traded before camp started.
And
now he might be their second wide receiver.
Right. And he's almost like borderline untouchable at this point, at least within the context of like the peers that he has on his team. If you got approached with a good deal, you make it. But yeah, he has elevated himself from, oh, all right, good second year player to, oh, a legitimate participant and key contributor on this offense, to go with Pop Douglas, who I think a lot of people expect another step, who has been showing consistent growth in his career. Stephon Diggs, yes, he's been a headache, and yes, he's been a quote-unquote pain in the posterior, as much as, you know, he wanted to say in the media a day or two ago that he disagreed and it was, you know, he didn't really understand where it was coming from. Yes, he has. Like, let's call a pain in the posterior a pain in the posterior. You know what the expectations were of you. You know that going on the boat with the bag of whatever was not what the Patriots and what you needed from a PR perspective. This team and this fan base could have gained a lot from you being there, despite it just being a voluntary program. All that to say, he's ready to go for week one, and you've seen flashes despite him kind of just picking and choosing when to be on the field during the preseason and during training camp. You've certainly seen flashes of, oh, this kid's still a star. And if put in the right situations and if supported by Booty and Douglas and Hollins, then he should be a pretty important safety blanket for Drake May this season. That's what you're hoping for. And the guy that just would not quit in Efton Chisholm had every single chance to fall off during this offseason, this training camp, in this preseason. Every excuse to emerge as just an undrafted guy that fell off, and he didn't. Now he's facing the biggest challenge so far, which is, okay, now you're an NFL player. Prove it. Prove that you are supposed to be here and that you weren't just a great camp story. But, I mean, is there anything that you've seen so far that would suggest that he can't do that? He's not going to be a wide receiver one, I certainly don't think. But he can be a useful player in certain situations. He'll probably get some chances on special teams. And if he can be a guy who, you know, I mean, he's going to be, you know, 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, but he's going to catch the ball. He's a positive yard guy no matter what. then that's a very valuable guy to have in a rotational wide receiver spot. So winners for me, wide receiving room. I think they come out of the preseason a lot better than how they went in. The running backs, I think, continue to be probably the best position group on the roster, healthy right now. I still think that that's a massive part of what you're going to do as an offense, both in the run game and in the screen game. Really, really fascinated, because it seems like while you have a guy who's been a star in Stephon Diggs, you have a guy who profiles out as a potential star in Travion Henderson. So the running backs, the wide receivers, I think your tight end, all of your skill positions for, I think, where they started in camp, you feel a little bit better about that group. The problem is the biggest loser, still for my money, and we'll get to the other ones in a moment, is still your offensive line. Because you went in thinking, well, we completely redid this thing. We should have four new starters on your offensive line. You do, but how do you feel about any of them? Campbell, all right, decent camp. Seems like he's a really good run blocker. We'll see how he does pass blocking, and he's going to get a significant welcome to the NFL moment tomorrow against Max Crosby in that matchup. And then he's going to turn around and get TJ Watt, and he's gonna get a couple really, really tough matchups right off the bat. So we'll see how he does. He doesn't worry me as much as the duo of him and Jared Wilson together on the left side, a combination that I still disagree with and don't understand how the Patriots settled on these two next to each other. Why not play the center as the center and put the veteran in between them? That's not what they're going to do. So between everybody who's not named Mike Onwenu was a loser on the offensive line during the offseason, I still think. Campbell, jury's still out, but Wilson playing a non-natural position, Bradbury, Brown, whatever Morgan Moses is going
to
be.
I mean, he hasn't practiced at all. So right. You have nothing to base off, because it felt like every practice that he did participate in, he walked off the field early.
Right. And it was chalked up to be load management?
Pretty much. They're treating him like Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
Which is not a good thing.
No, it's not. I was going to say, that was not said with love. I can tell you that for free. But yeah, so I don't know how you can come out of camp feeling any better about the offensive line this year than you did last year. I'm not going as far as Andy Hart did to say that it's going to be worse, but I don't think that you can unequivocally say that it's going to be better right now. So in all of this, all of what I just mentioned about the players on offense, the weapons, the ability to move the ball downfield and score is all predicated on Drake May having a second to sit back there and breathe. And I think while Drake had a net positive camp, net neutral at very worst, it wasn't a net negative, which is a good thing. I still think that those who are unsure of his ability to go through his reads quickly, to make quick passes, to be able to withstand pressure, stay in the pocket, and step up in the pocket and make good throws, or identify when he can make a throw versus tucking and running. I still think there are plenty of people who doubt that. I am one of them. And I think he's going to have to prove that, because I don't think he proved that he has that skill set yet. And it stinks. I mean, he's played exactly zero NFL games with a good offensive line. Plenty of quarterbacks fall victim to having no protection in front of them. And he's going to have to find a way to be a NFL caliber pocket passer dealing with very limited pockets and very limited time before contact. He's just going to have to find a way to be better than that. Wasn't a camp winner, wasn't a camp loser. To me, he was somewhere in the middle. I think that's a very key part of his game. Remaining, and he mentioned this, it was within a different context because he was talking about scrambling, but just the general idea of remaining a passer longer is something that he identified at the beginning of camp that he was still working on, and I still don't think he's quite there. But again, switching to Josh McDaniels, they're still building the offense. The offensive line is still very much a work in progress, so I'm not judging a guy for his entire career based on where he is going in to game one of season two and his first week one start as a professional. I'm not judging that at this point. So we'll see where that goes. And the secondary, by the way, was the other loser that I wanted to mention. Going from Gonzalez and Carlton Davis with Kyle Duggar and Jabril Peppers, and then the depth pieces that have been talked about, double A. Mike Vrabel loves to call Alex Austin double A. And being able to work Craig Woodson in a bit more naturally and have him be a rotational piece. Same with Jalen Hawkins, to the complete blowing up of the safety room.
You didn't even touch on Marcus Epps, who requested a release, and they granted that too.
Right, exactly, which would have been at least a valuable rotational player.
Who played on the Raiders last year.
Right.
Who might know some of the stuff that they like.
There you go. I mean, that's a specific matchup that you're losing in that one. But the secondary was supposed to be a real strength of this team. And now you're down Gonzalez, which of course you weren't expecting, but this is now three seasons where he is going to play less than a full season's worth of games. So it's something that is going to be true about Christian Gonzalez until it's not, is that he's not always out there and available. Could he have pushed through last year? There's probably a conversation to be had there, but it's true. There are injuries that pop up with this player. It's just something that comes along with him. So winners and losers abound. The Patriots, again, I picked them to win 7 games on the afternoon show. Everybody on that show picked between 7 and 8, but Brian Hoyer said 8-11. So again, the general public, the local media, still, I think, by and large, if you grouped everybody together, is a little bit lower on the Patriots than the national media. I just think that national media, who's not following the team every day, isn't going to necessarily know that Morgan Moses wasn't practicing, or isn't going to understand the safety debacle, or know that Carlton Davis was barely on the field for any of this. They're not going to know the day in, day out, oh, well, this is an issue that shouldn't have been an issue. They're not going to know that. So I think that's kind of why you see a game or two discrepancy, why you see more national people picking the Patriots as a wild card team than local people. I still think they're going to be a significantly better and more watchable team this year. And for those that are sure that they're going to be a playoff team and probably don't want to hear that, it's okay if they're a 7-win team, but a competitive 7-win team, if Drake May gets better, if Gonzalez gets back and is healthy, if Will Campbell proves he's a left tackle in this league, if you have something with Douglas and Booty. There are individual wins that you can have this year that are more important to me than actual wins on the field. 617-779-7937. Is Drake May poised for a jump in year number 2? Where does he rank among that pretty incredible class of 2024 quarterback group in that draft? We'll ask ESPN Radio's Freddie Coleman that and more next after Brian Frazoco gets you caught up on what's trending.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball. On WEEI.
Back here on WEEI, the Patriots open up the 2025 season tomorrow afternoon against the Las Vegas Raiders. Again, don't forget to catch WEEI's NFL and Patriots football Sunday. Christian Arkan, Ted Johnson, and the crew breaking it down beginning tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Joining us on the line now here on WEEI, the host of Freddie and Harry weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on ESPN Radio. That is Freddie Coleman. Freddie, good evening. How are you, sir?
Good, brother Dan. How's everything with you today, my man?
Everything is great. It's great to hear your voice again, and thank you so much for the time here on this Saturday as we get ready for the 2025 season here in the greater Boston area. A much different group, coaches and players, for the New England Patriots from a season ago. From your perspective, covering the entire league on ESPN Radio, how would you describe what the Patriots did from the end of their 2024 season to where we are right now?
Well, they wanted to have a better coach football team, and Mike Vrabel, when he was a Tennessee Titans head coach, was one of the better coaches in the National Football League. And one of the things that he's going to do, he's going to make sure that his quarterback is going to be protected when it comes to Drake May going into his second season. They're going to do what Tennessee was able to do so successfully under Mike Vrabel's reign, and that is be a really good defensive team, run the football, and protect your quarterback. And he has a young quarterback that can make plays in the passing game and the running game. So you clearly understood that while Jerod Mayo did everything he could, he just seemed to be in over his head a lot of the time. Mike Vrabel, a proven player with the Patriots, a proven coach in the National Football League. You clearly understand why Robert Kraft made that move as owner of the Patriots.
How do you view Drake May amongst his peers, and specifically amongst that incredible 2024 NFL draft class of QBs?
Well, it's still too early to tell because he didn't have a lot of weapons or any kind of resources around him last year. So you should expect that he's going to be better this year, not just because Mike Vrabel is there, but Josh McDaniels is his offense coordinator. So when you have a guy that has experience orchestrating offenses, putting offenses together for a young or an experienced quarterback, you would expect that he's going to make that step up or maybe a couple of steps up. So it's incomplete regarding Drake May in terms of last year because he really didn't have the kind of opportunity to be a successful quarterback, and he played pretty well. He played pretty well, Dan, even though that personnel was not around him last year.
Yeah, no question about that. And as we sit here, we've had, of course, a million and one season previews going on for the Patriots and the NFL in general. We've seen people in this area with 6 to 7 wins. We've seen people with 10, 11 wins in this team competing in the AL wild card. So where do you fall from the 6 to 7 pessimist to the 11 win predictions for the Patriots? Are you somewhere in the middle of that?
Yeah, because there's no way they're winning 11 games. I mean, I know the NFL, you can go from the outhouse to the penthouse and the penthouse to the outhouse if you're not careful. If you have an injury or two, that could be very debilitating to your team. I think that's a lot of asking too much of Drake May in his second year, Mike Vrabel in his first year together with Josh McDaniels to be an 11-win team. But they will be an improved football team. They will be better defensively. They will be better coached at both ends, whether it's offense, defense, special teams, whatever that's going to be. But I don't think people realize how hard it is in the National Football League that 1 second you could be a team that was a bottom feeder like the Patriots were, and then instead they're going to go from a 3-4-win team to 11-win team, especially when the Raiders game is not going to be easy because Pete Carroll is a proven head coach, and you got Geno Smith and Ashton Jeanty at the running back position, the first-round pick out of Boise State. That Dolphins team is never easy to play because you know what kind of offense you're going to get, and then you have the Steelers after that. So as much as a great level of excitement that the Patriots will be improved, remember, this is a process. It's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight, no matter what kind of prognostications out there involving New England.
Freddie, there isn't a ton of traditional star power, you could call it, on this Patriots group. They have a lot of good players. They spent a lot of money in free agency. But the one guy that you could argue has unequivocally been a star during his career is Stephon Diggs. He's coming off of a significant lower body injury. He's been said that he's good to go for week one. But how do you view Diggs at this point in his career? Do you see him being a productive member of the Patriots?
Well, he's 31 years of age, and Stephon Diggs is going to make your quarterback better. We saw what he was able to do with the Minnesota Vikings, no matter who was playing quarterback. We saw that with Josh Allen early on at the Buffalo Bills until they kind of shifted things. It became more of a run-based team and didn't have to rely on having the big plays from their wide receivers. It's going to be very interesting what this is going to look like because he's had 5 different seasons catching at least 100 catches in a season. No one should expect that from a 31-year-old wide receiver coming off a knee surgery where he only played 8 games last year for the Houston Texans. But any kind of possession, any kind of key catch, that's where they're going to look to. That's the person they should look to. And if they're able to do that and he succeeds early, then it's going to raise everybody else's level. It's going to make everybody better to say we got to catch up to that and not just from the quarterback position.
Freddie Coleman of ESPN Radio joining us here on WEEI, host of Freddie and Harry, 3 to 7 on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, the TuneIn Radio app, and you can also tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio as well. To zoom out the scope of our conversation a bit, Freddie, the Patriots in the AFC East. It's a division that I've seen prognosticated a bunch of different ways, but where do you see the Patriots within the division, and what do you make of the main competition they have for that second spot, the Jets and the Dolphins?
I think the Jets will be more of a team that Paige has to deal with than the Miami Dolphins because I think a lot of the Dolphins players and maybe coaches are playing for their jobs. And you want to see exactly how that stress is going to happen and how they're going to deal with that. The Jets always seem to be in a position where they're starting over, but at least they're starting with a guy in Aaron Glenn who played for them, and they believe that Justin Fields can help out in the passing game and the running game, and that's going to be slow going. We can't expect Justin Fields, even though he was a top 11 pick when drafted by the Chicago Bears, to all of a sudden step in and be the guy that I thought the Jets should have drafted back then instead of taking Zach Wilson, but at least as an organization behind him. That's where I put both of those teams right now. I believe the Jets are going to be really good defensively. I think the Dolphins' defense could be pretty good as well. But I can see all three of those teams playing for second behind the Buffalo Bills, of course, maybe 7-8 wins. I think that's the ceiling, no matter who that's going to be. The one that's the most potential to get past that is the Miami Dolphins, if they can recapture their offense that was so successful before everything fell apart when Tua Tagovailoa once again could not stay healthy last year.
Is this the chance that this is Mike McDaniel's final year with the Dolphins?
Yeah, they go 8-9, yeah, or even 9-8 and don't make the playoffs. Yeah, I could see them making a change. And Mike McDaniels has the one thing that has gone against him is that he has had this offense so centered around Tua Tagovailoa for obvious reasons, because when he's healthy, Dan, he's one of the most accurate passers in the National Football League. But that injury factor is always going to be a high-risk factor involving Tua. And the fact that that adjustment was never made with a backup quarterback has to be something that is very, very defeating if you're a Miami Dolphins organizational member. So as long as he stays healthy, they could be a viable team offensively, and they get a little bit better defensively. But they wind up being 7-10, 8-9. The Miami Dolphins will have a new head coach next year.
They are going to be fascinating to watch. The entirety of the AFC East going to be fascinating to watch for sure. But Freddie, before we let you go, the Buffalo Bills at the top end of the AFC East, it seems like they have been dancing around the potential of being Super Bowl champions. They've been the bridesmaid a couple of times. They have not yet been the bride. So where do you see the Bills within the AFC and the NFL picture? Could this be Buffalo's year?
It should be, as long as they don't run that team in Kansas City in the playoffs, because they have not had any success with them. And Kansas City's 4-0 against Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills the four times they met in the playoffs. We know they have the personnel, and I think they have a coach that does not get enough credit when it comes to Sean McDermott. He really has a great pulse on this football team and knows exactly what buttons to push, when to get after guys, and when to lay back. This team is going to go as far as Josh Allen is going to go, and they believe they should be better defensively. I still wonder about them not having that pass rush off the outside. They thought Von Miller was going to be that, but there's a top three tier in the AFC, and they're in with the Baltimore Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs, even though the Kansas City Chiefs lost last night in Brazil to the Los Angeles Chargers. They have all the makings of being a 12-13 win team. But you keep wondering, when is it going to happen? And then it doesn't happen. Then you wonder what kind of new voice you may need involving a coach, players, whatever that's going to be. So as long as Buffalo is a contending team, you have to think about them, Dan. But they got to find a way to get out of that and get to a Super Bowl. And the AFC keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger, making that task even more difficult for the Buffalo Bills.
You can catch Freddie Coleman with Harry Douglas on ESPN Radio weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. You can also catch that on the ESPN app and SiriusXM Channel 80. Freddie, before we let you go, if a wild card series in Major League Baseball came up between the Red Sox and the Yankees, who you taking?
Well, I'm a Mets fan, so I really don't care. I don't care who wins that series. And also, as a New York Mets fan, I can just watch that series and not even worry about it. But as of right now, the Red Sox, they have more of a fight in them that they do not lose ball games. You have to beat them. Yeah. And I think at times the Yankees lose ball games more than anything else. So that's going to be a wild card playoff. I'm going to slide my money to the Boston Red Sox. I trust that late game situations, they'll find the quality pitching and the quality hitting that I think they would take down the New York Yankees in a wild card series.
Beautiful. That is good enough for me. Freddie, thank you so much for the time. Great to hear your voice once again. Enjoy the beginning of the football season, and we'll do it again soon.
You too, Dan. Great to hear your voice as well, my brother. Take care and have a great rest of the show and a great weekend, too.
Thank you, sir. Same to you. That is Freddie Coleman joining us here on WEEI, Freddie of ESPN Radio, talking a little football, a little baseball at the end, and God bless him for being a Mets fan. But we'll talk about some of his observations of the Patriots in the AFC East when we return here on WEEI.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
WEEI.
Where do you fall from the 6-7 pessimist to the 11 win predictions for the Patriots? Are you somewhere in the middle of that?
Yeah, because there's no way they're winning 11 games. I mean, I know the NFL, you can go from the outhouse to the penthouse and the penthouse to the outhouse. If you're not careful, if you have an injury or two, that could be very debilitating to your team. I think that's a lot of asking too much of Drake May in his second year, Mike Vrabel in his first year together with Josh McDaniels.
That was Freddie Coleman of ESPN Radio joining us here on WEEI. And to answer the 508, is this the Fred Coleman, the stiff that was cut by the Patriots prior to the Super Bowl? Not that I'm aware of. He's been an ESPN Radio host for a long time, but if there was another past to Freddie Coleman that I am not aware of, I don't know. But no, he joined us, and always a pleasure to catch up with him as he poured a little bit of cold water on the high end of the Patriots predictions that we've heard. And I thought that was fascinating for somebody who, as was described previously, you know, covers the NFL as a whole with ESPN Radio. He's a New York centric guy, as he mentioned, with being a Mets fan, but he covers the entire NFL. And I've still seen the general trend of predictions from national NFL pundits. I was watching Good Morning Football, for example, and two of the three hosts on the show picked the Patriots to be a wild card team. And I found that interesting. I figured that he would be a little bit more on the positive, at least maybe 9-10 win side of things, but not necessarily being the case there for Freddie Coleman. Brian, I don't know if you addressed this on the afternoon show. What did you land on for your win-loss prediction for this team?
I've been going 10 wins.
10 wins.
I think I've been told by everybody, a lot of my Patriots friends,
okay,
who are high on Drake May, that Drake May's a really good quarterback.
Okay.
I've been told by a lot of Patriots fans and people who I work with here at WEEI that Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels are very good coaches.
Okay.
And I think if you have a very good coach, a very good offensive coordinator, and a very good quarterback, and the schedule that they have, which is pretty much a cakewalk for the most part,
right,
that's 9 or 10 wins. And I also look at it and I say, if you have a really good quarterback, they don't usually go back-to-back years winning, let's say, 6 or 7 or fewer games. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you look at a guy like Peyton Manning, right? Obviously, his rookie year is sort of the year a lot of people point to, right? If their rookie quarterback struggles. Okay, we'll look at Peyton Manning's rookie year. I think they went something like 2-14 and he threw a million picks, right?
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
he turned it around the next year. Troy Aikman went, I think, 1-15 his rookie year, and then eventually turned it around. And I think they won, had a winning record his sophomore year. So I don't know. I'm told Drake May's a really good quarterback. So if he's a really good quarterback, then he only won, you know, I think one game last year. He gets credited for 3 wins, but
yeah,
he only finished one game that he started in which the Patriots won. So he should be winning more than 6 or 7 games this year if he's as good as everybody says he is.
Well, and that's what it is hingent upon, I guess, is he really number 3 overall good, and is he there? Because the biggest comparison, the most flattering comparison that we hear to Drake May in this market is Josh Allen. That's what everybody wants him to be. The big, physical, can throw, can dominate in the run, just a winner who eventually was coached out of the interceptions and the stupid decisions that kind of plagued him in his collegiate career and then early in his NFL career. If you buy into that comparison, Josh Allen was on a 10-win team as a sophomore quarterback. So that's kind of what is expected of a guy if you're trying to follow in that trajectory. I think the difference between 7 wins and 10 wins is the first month of the season. Because for me, I still think that the offense, all of the pieces that you're trying to just slam together in one offseason, I just don't think it's quite there yet. I think it's going to take a couple of games for Drake May to be able to operate Josh McDaniels' offense, and it's going to take a couple of games for Travion Henderson to be truly dominant and dynamic if he's going to be that at the NFL level. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time for all of these new pieces, all of these rookies, all of these untested guys to find their way in the NFL.
I also agree with what you're saying, right? The first month of the season being so big.
Yeah.
I also look at just the teams that they're playing, right? I think the Raiders game tomorrow is a game that you sort of look at it and say that can go either way, right?
Absolutely.
Miami in Miami. I think later in the year when Miami comes up here, early January, you say that should be a win,
yeah,
right? Miami always struggles.
I have that marked as a win.
Late in the year, especially in cold weather, like that should be a win. But down in Miami, week 2, like that's sort of a toss-up. I think a lot of people don't know what you expect out of Pittsburgh this year, right? Like, how is it going to look with Aaron Rodgers? How is Mike Tomlin? Does he still have the locker room?
For
so,
sure.
The first 3 weeks, I think, are huge swing games. They could be 3-0. They could be 0-3. They could be 1-2, 2-1. Like, it sort of could go any direction. I think these 3 games sort of dictate the rest of their season. But I also look at it and say, you're better than 2 of these teams.
Yeah, you are.
You're better than the Raiders.
You're supposed to be.
you should be better than Miami. And I know it's sort of a tough place, even in the glory days with Brady and Bill, like they would lose in Miami. They just would. But I think outside of Pittsburgh, you're better than those three teams. I think you should be starting 2-1 at absolute worst if you're going to drop a game 1-2. But there's no excuse to start the year 0-3, 1-4, anything like that.
I have them starting 0-3. And I know I'm going to sound like a hater in saying that. I have them going loss, 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 win against the Panthers, loss against the Bills, and then I have them winning 3 in a row against the Saints, the Titans, and the Browns. So through that first 1, 2, 3, 4.
So that's a 1-4 start.
It's a 1-4 start, and then you win 3 in a row, and then you're back to 500. So I have them 4-4 through 8, but losing the first 3.
I
agree with you that you're supposed to be better than all three. I think you're supposed to be better than all three of these teams.
I said this.
I just don't think you are yet.
I said this in one of our pre-show meetings during this week. If you're just going to keep losing to Geno Smith, what was the point of hiring Mike Vrabel in the first place? Well, I mean, seriously, like, if we're just going to keep losing Geno Smith, but I'm told that Vrabel is a much better coach than Jerod Mayo. Jerod Mayo lost in overtime to Geno Smith last year. Like, I look at it and say, like, Vrabel's supposed to beat these middling to bad quarterbacks, especially when he has an improved roster from last year, right? Like, I don't think the Patriots roster, I think it's devoid of top-end talent, for sure. Absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
But they are still a decent enough roster that I think with a good coach, like I said, a good quarterback, you should be beating the Geno Smiths of the world, the Tua Tagovailoas of the world, the 43-year-old Aaron Rodgers, who's coming off 2 years removed from an Achilles tear, and he didn't even look that much better last year. Like, these are games that you should be winning. And if you're not beating Geno Smith, what was the point of hiring Mike Vrabel in the first place?
I think that's a hasty thing to say after week one when you turned over like 2/3 of this roster.
And I'm not saying if they lose week one, oh my God, fire Mike Vrabel. This was a complete joke of a hire. But I just sort of look at it bigger picture and say, Jerod Mayo could lose to bad quarterbacks. Like, I could bring Jerod Mayo in to keep losing to bad quarterbacks. Like, Mike Vrabel, that's what he should be doing. That's sort of the bare minimum I expect from Mike Vrabel, is to beat the bad quarterbacks in the NFL. If he's not doing that, then I don't really see the value there. He's not an offensive mind. He's not there to sort of mold and help Drake May develop and grow. He's sort of there to keep you in games and win games for you that, you know, maybe you're devoid of talent in terms of defensive line, in terms of Max Crosby, or tight end Brock Bowers. But he should be beating the bad quarterbacks. That's what Mike Vrabel's here to do.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, my concerns with the Patriots in the first 3 weeks have very little to do with Mike Vrabel. He's going to coach 3 competitive games with 3 competitive teams. I don't think they're talented enough and they're too young to be ready to go come week one. That's my biggest concern. And maybe that, hey, to your point, maybe that is an indictment on the coaching staff. If these rookies, if Will Campbell isn't ready to protect Drake May's blind side, if Travion Henderson isn't ready to score a touchdown a game and be explosive, if Kyle Williams isn't ready to go, like if there are if that the coaching staff hasn't addressed yet, then that is an indictment on Mike Vrabel.
I look at the Raiders. The Raiders won just as many games as the Patriots did last year.
Yeah.
Right? And they sort of made marginal improvements as well. They didn't really add anybody, some, you know, huge free agent. You know, they added a running back in the draft, which only can take you so far. Like, I just don't see a huge difference in terms of the Patriots and the Raiders. I look at coaching and quarterback, right? That's what we were told to do here for 20 years when the Patriots had Brady and Bill.
Right.
You should have the advantage in both, I think. I think Vrabel's a better coach than Pete Carroll. I think Drake May should be better than Geno Smith, and probably is right now, right? Like, he should be. He's the 3rd overall pick, highly touted. Like, Drake May should be better than Geno Smith. And I think the rosters are pretty comparable. I think they maybe have a couple better high-end players in terms of Bowers and Crosby. But overall, like, I don't think their defense is very good. I think their secondary blows. Giardi told us that on Friday. Their secondary is god-awful. Their linebackers can't cover. Like, there's a lot of holes on this Raiders team. And this is a team that lost 13 games. Whatever. What is it? 4-13. Yeah, so 13 games last year. The same amount of games you lost last year.
Right.
They're not that much better than you.
No,
if
I agree.
At all.
Yeah. This is, yeah, this
and you're
is,
at home.
It's not a good matchup, but the Raiders see you and they go, oh, they're not much better than that. We'll put a pin in that. We need to go to break right now. We'll continue this. There's also a cut from Josh McDaniels that Brian found talking about where Drake May is in terms of learning the offense. We'll get to that. Also, there was a interesting write-up on the Bears draft process and their evaluation of Drake May that caught my eye. So we have a lot to get to, so we should take a break. We'll do that now. We're back after this.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.